Healthy-ish is recorded live from Lankford Studios in Cedar Hill, Texas.
Today's segment is in memory of and dedicated to George Floyd.
How are you today?
You know, it's a lot going on, and there's a lot of different thoughts and ideas, and you know, maybe even a little confusion mixed in there. So I'm not really sure just yet, but I know that there's definitely going to be a change. I feel like that's going to kind of evolve out of all of this.
I think so.
Well, you know, if we look at history, you know, and we just kind of look at, I think what somebody was actually, you know, it's been shared a number of times that, you know, yesterday was the anniversary of the Tulsa riot. And I said to a friend of mine, like maybe a few days back that, you know, how people are so upset about the riots, but, you know, they, white mobs went and destroyed that whole community, you know, back in 1921. Yeah. And so we kind of have learned how to make statements, bold statements, you know, because that's exactly what that was designed to do. It was designed to make a statement, and it pushed us back, pushed us as black people back, you know, hundreds of years after that. So it's, I mean, that's not the only thing.
True.
So, you know, burning crosses on our yards and burning down our businesses and our homes, talking about the KKK. So all of those things have made statements, you know. And I feel that, I do feel that something is going to change out of all of this. Yes, I do. Yeah.
Oh, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that it will also. I think the biggest issue has been it does change temporarily and then it goes back to status quo. And that is the goal. And we're talking about and want to dedicate our show to George Floyd's family, his memory, his presence, his purpose, and all those that are standing in whatever position they're standing in. I think that that's a huge issue also right now, because we learned in the Butler that all of us have a role and everyone's role is different. If you choose to protest, that is certainly your option and choice. If I choose to stay home and work in another capacity, that is my choice. There are so many ways to venge this horrific act. You can write your congresspersons and legislators. And as we talk and sit here and talk about it, you know, I have this wonderful bundle of love in my hands that I, when first hearing the news and seeing only 2, maybe 3 seconds of the video, that's all I can handle to watch. I have not watched more than that, tempted to, but can't, because just seeing the part that shows his knee on the officer's knee on George's neck and that facial expression George had, it is enough to show that there is a huge issue in our society that we refuse to address permanently. You know, we address it temporarily and go back to the status quo. And so I don't want us to miss out on the opportunity to just explore how important it is for us to be open-minded and how each person vindicate themselves in this. It may be going to law school. It may be going to finish college because of this. It, you know, different people have different ways of reaffirming themselves through this process, you know. I certainly agree with you. Change should take place, and I'm hopeful that it will. But the change definitely has to take place within our hearts, you know, our hearts and minds. I don't know exactly why we keep missing the notion that the change, that it's a black and white issue, because you, as well as I know, all of our black brothers are not the same. All of our white brothers are not the same. All of our brothers and sisters in blue are not the same.
this is a heart issue and it is a mind issue, right? And until we change our hearts and minds, we will continue to have this. That officer that was on that street was a monster. There is no question about that. There were several incidents prior to that that indicated that he had done some things that would preclude one to think that his coattail should have been pulled a long time ago. Then there is the arrogance of doing this particular act in front of everybody. You know, there were broad daylight witnesses, people actually hollering, saying, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And he didn't hear any of that, right? There was a level of arrogance, cockiness. There was a level of, I won't even say demonic. Spirit in him to make him treat someone else that way, evilness in him. And that's what I think the problem is with our society, because they're saying we live in a world of contradictions. And we tend to cast blame on the title, like your wife, your doctor, your nurse, but it's the heart and the mind. So they're saying, why are you all upset and outraged about this guy doing this? But then over the past week, so many people died in Chicago and it was black on black, you know? So how are you so upset? It's okay for somebody else to do it, but it's not okay. It's okay for you to do it, but not somebody else. And so we have a heart issue in our culture and we definitely need to address it. And I feel it's almost paralyzed those that are not marching in anger. You know, it's almost like there's no other way to march. If you're not going to march in love or I'm not, and I don't mean march, but if you don't have anything else to say, then you don't, you shouldn't say anything, you know, is what I'm gathering. And so, I do want to talk about that a little bit, because that mother's love is so very important. And that was that cry out that gentleman had before leaving this earth. And to our surprise, his mom had been deceased. I think 2 days ago marked the 2-year anniversary of her passing. So he's hollering out to her. And so many moms are now just hollering out saying, Lord, please, you know, spare my children, you know, spare my child. We're blacking out today. Today is Blackout Tuesday. Don't buy anything. Don't post anything. Just take a moment, you know, and let refresh yourself, refresh your mind on what you need to do as a being, a human being. And I think that's a great idea. You know, just stop. Just stop.
Of doing the blackout today and not buying anything, or
stopping everything and just kind of reflecting, meditating on who you are and what you mean and what you should do, and you know where you should
be. I think that you know, that's like a, that type of reflection can be somewhat saddening in the same time too, because you know, we as people feel like we've come a long way, and then to still have to grapple with these type of injustices, you know, and then having to worry about our sons or, you know, our significant others or whatever family members that we have, it's just, it kind of brings you to a way into a place of defeat almost, because it reminds us of that not everybody thinks the same way. You know, we think that other people feel or probably feel the same way on this issue that is wrong, you know, but time and time again, you speak to other people and you see that,
right,
that not everybody agrees with that position. And, you know, I feel like it's not just a race issue. It's an issue of humanity. I mean, if you as a person, right, you know, cannot
that's
see
what I mean,
that
by
this
heart,
is
yeah,
not right, mm-hmm, you know, and it's mm-hmm, just like, mm-hmm, it makes you feel like, mm-hmm, what hope do we have, mm-hmm, for the people, you know, that they cannot overcome and they cannot look at this issue as not just being about a Black issue, or there's always the topic of, you know, well, this person was doing this, or I mean, but I think at the end of the day is that, you know, this person didn't have a right to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people really get ahead of the issue, mm-hmm, you know, so. I think that you know, it's good to stand in solidarity over
it. Right. And have you encountered people to say that they don't think that it was right?
I haven't known anybody personally, but getting on social media,
okay,
I do see people posting their opinions, you know,
which is,
and anytime their opinions on that, you know, he was trying to make a transaction with a counterfeit 20.
Uh-huh.
You know, so people get caught up in what he was doing before his life was taken. Uh-huh. You know, I see that a lot. And then another thing that I'm seeing is that anytime someone tries to stand in solidarity, meaning like a non-Black person,
mm-hmm,
you know, tries to stand, because that's kind of the issue that is becoming more and more of a trend, is when are we going to see more white people of non-Blacks, right, mm-hmm, standing up, mm-hmm, for people of color in this issue?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I start seeing non-whites, non-Blacks, people laugh at me,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I mean, not Blacks, but non-Blacks laugh, you know, at people standing in solidarity,
mm-hmm,
you know, with people of color over the issue, you know, and it, again, you know, mm-hmm, it makes me wonder, you know, it has to be, it's not just about the whole issue of race again, you know, it has to be about, mm-hmm, something psychological there, you know, when it comes down to it, you,
yeah,
know, that what is really going on,
yeah,
you know, but, you know, it reminds you that how we're just so divided as people. We know, even though we have friends of different races, you know, we can still be very divided.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, and you have to remember this, you're not going to have everyone, mm-hmm, agree on everything, mm-hmm, ever. That's just, mm-hmm, not going to happen. And it's because of the different perspectives, right? So just like with the, mm-hmm, looting, this is my, you know, from a sociological perspective, and this, you know, and last night in my school board trustees meeting, I may have gotten a lot more heated than, mm-hmm, I normally would, because I made a statement and it was discredited in my opinion because someone else had a, mm-hmm, different opinion. And I am of the opinion that that's one of the issues we, mm-hmm, have today. People are wanting to be heard over, you know, discrediting other people, when in all actuality, people are just, mm-hmm, wanting to be heard and want you to consider, mm-hmm, their opinion, right? And everything doesn't have, mm-hmm, to be a debate. So my concern was, we're adopting a lot of new systems, technology systems. We had a system for grading and for attendance. We have a system, lesson plans, and we have another system for testing. And then we have for keeping up with
you cut out. What do you have a system for?
Attendance. You have a system for grades. You have a system for, I think the grades and attendance, mm-hmm, are together. Then you have one for testing. And then you have one for lesson plans, and, you know, then you have one for all the other things that you've accomplished, just like a background, mm-hmm, right? And to some children, mm-hmm, that may or may not be, mm-hmm, fair, right? Because now, what's a new year if I got a teacher that is reading my background from, mm-hmm, last year, right? Am I
cutting out? No, you're fine.
Are you able to hear me? So what's a new year if you're going to hold me accountable to something that I did last year. And so, but they're wanting to use this to gauge progress. And I get that. But if teachers are not really having a whole lot of time, if they're having to devote a lot of time to technology as opposed to the children lose. Because our classroom sizes are often very large or not as small as they should be. And then we're increasing their responsibilities in technology. So I'm just basically saying, I hope that we don't lose sight that this is a human being and not a robot, right? And I hope that we're understanding that we're losing a lot of teachers, and a lot of teachers leave because they may feel like it's becoming impersonal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's already email this, email that, survey this, survey that. So, and there was a rebuttal. But we need this. The school I was at said, I didn't say we don't need it. I'm just saying we need to make sure that we are not becoming so impersonal that people are missing out, because this is going to be a difference maker as to whether people stay with us or not. And so I just got heated because I think that that is a part of why people are so irate. They're saying, I talked, we came to meetings, we did this, we did that. Nobody's listening. But now you're calling me. You know, the people from the Black Lives Matter movement are now getting the phone call. But before this, briefly before this, no calls were being returned, right? I get that. With our nonprofit, with our agency, you and I have worked on projects before, and it's difficult to get the buy-in from the city, from the state, on projects to improve the community, you know? And then you hear them say, we work with communities, we work with community organizations. And so my problem is, you do it when it's heated, but then when things calm down, they feel like they're a non-factor, and that's the issue. So, and the people are saying burning down houses, burning down buildings. They used to say you're burning down buildings in your own neighborhood, but that actually is not happening. They're actually burning down buildings in other areas, right? Downtown, north of the areas. And so they're not burning in their own neighborhoods. And so people are like, they're not really saying that as much as they are saying, why are you burning down businesses? What is that going to do? Well, what it does is helps them to understand. These young people are very articulate in saying it on the news. Well, you wouldn't listen to that, but we know you care about finances. We know you care about your business. You know you care about your money. So maybe now you'll listen, you know. And sure enough, it's happening.
It's true.
They're reaching out. They're wanting to know. First, they start off with name calling, but now they realize these people are, and I don't advocate it. Mm-hmm. I don't advocate it. But again, there are levels to this pain. I can assure you, without even doing, that they want to call these people that are doing the rioting thugs, right? I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm sure there are some that may have that. But what makes a thug? Let's talk about that. How does a person get to that in a community, to that place? Some of them have been assaulted. Some have been abandoned. How do you get to a place where you're a thug?
Well, I also think that some of the people that I think it's possible that some of the people that are protesting do not have the same goal in mind as the common goal. Right. So, I have a couple of examples of this, but I really believe that there are people that are probably just doing it for other reasons. You know, there maybe it's a trend thing for them or whatever. You know, maybe it's they want to be a part of some type of movement or something like that. Maybe they just want to go out and do things that, you know, involve some type of a level of violence, you know. So I do think that there are some people who are not really. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. But how did I get there, though?
I mean, you
how
know.
How did I get to a place where I want to be destructive and hurt mm-hmm. people, right? How do I get there? See, this is what we're trying to get mm-hmm. people to see. You want to call me names, but how do I, why? Okay, so, you know, I wasn't doing this mm-hmm. before mm-hmm. this act, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This is a reaction mm-hmm. to an action. Nobody's saying, if this man mm-hmm. would have just... And these people are saying, if you would just arrest those other three, mm-hmm. I was in the car with someone. And one person had the gun. All three of us are accessories. How are they not accessories mm-hmm. to this crime? Have all this go on instead of uphold the law with those three officers. Mm-hmm. And my point is this, Priscilla, if you,
breaking out,
yes. Prissy, if you, okay, good, Prissy, if you push me, I'm not going to shoot you, right? If you step on my foot, I'm not going to mm-hmm. hit you so hard I knock your teeth out, right? There are levels to this. There's got to be some pain that resides in me or motive mm-hmm. to make me want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to deal with. And if they're not wanting to mm-hmm. deal with that, are we going to learn anything? Are we going to grow? You're just going to name call? We do it all the time. When these people go and tear up the whole city, blow mm-hmm. up the whole, shoot up the whole mm-hmm. Walmart, we call them names, but we don't deal with these groups that build them up, start to make them mm-hmm. think that what they're doing is right. You know, this is the heart and the mind mm-hmm. that.
So you're saying that they've been cultivated over this time, you know, just given experience of experience, you know,
absolutely.
That they have, we created these types of individuals that, you know, feel like that there is no other option. This is the only way. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we don't deal with it. We don't mm-hmm. accept responsibility for our part in it. What we do is mm-hmm. we blame. We name call. And what mm-hmm. solution is that? So when you say, I think it's going to change, I'm wondering, mm-hmm. because have we even gotten there yet? We're having a hard time accepting mm-hmm. responsibility for our part in it and being consistent. Like, for example, the police chief should be mm-hmm. terminated that at the very least mm-hmm. because he did not hold his officers accountable when they have had over 18 mm-hmm. complaints against them. And they still mm-hmm. out there, killed three people. Mm-hmm. They killed three people. Mm-hmm. That's a monster. That's on the loose. And you, as the police chief, have not held that police officer accountable. So because of that, he's still out on the street. So. These are the responsibilities. Now, he has his deepest condolences to the family, right? But if you had been holding these officers accountable,
right.
we wouldn't have got to this place.
Right. I mean, because as far as we know, there is no one that polices the police. You know, I mean, the police, you know, they police us, but there is no one that oversees their, I mean, or it seems that there's no one that really oversees their behaviors and, you know, they can be held accountable for their misconduct.
Right. And so that leads us to, I'm sorry about that noise. And that leads us to this issue where are we really trying to get to the bottom of it? Are we really trying to be accountable for what is happening mm-hmm. Do we really want right. change? Are we really trying to change? And that's my concern here. Yeah. We still want to debate when, in all humility, we should say, the hurt and the pain that it takes to want to destroy something. That's destructive behavior. Destructive behavior means something is destructive in me. You know, it takes someone on television, you see the cameras watching you, to go in and take something that doesn't belong to someone else. I do this for a living and I see it every day. There's no life, there's no pride, there's no morals in people that go out and do that. Instead of them saying, we need to pour more resources in the community so these people don't feel like they have to do that. And even if their agenda is they got paid to do it. Or, you know, there are people that are, or they're mad because their cousin was killed by the police, or their dad was killed, or their mom. Because let's face it, if they interviewed those people, those are the stories you're going to probably hear. You know, oh yeah, that's why it's levels to it. People that can be peaceful in protest, most oftentimes, some of them, I should say, either have a really strong foundation in faith, but haven't been directly affected. But if you've been directly affected, it's hard, especially if you don't have a strong foundation of faith, you know, to withhold your anger and rage. So, you know, so I just want to talk about that because I was outraged. And I know that if I am, I know a lot of people are. I work with people a lot, help a lot of young people get their lives together. I've seen them say, thank you so much. I mean, just last week, two stories last week, a young man called and said, Miss, I got to tell you something. I finished my intensive outpatient class with you. I've finished my family violence class with you, and I'm about to take my anger management class with you. I've stopped smoking marijuana. I want to be a good dad to my daughter, but I haven't reported to my probation officer in a year. And I said, what? How is that possible? And we send your reports to your probation officer. And he said, you do? I said, yeah. And he said, well, I haven't reported. I said, okay, so I'll look into it. And so I did call the officer, supervisor, and the supervisor said that, and he told me why. The reason he hadn't talked to his supervisor is because, I mean, he hadn't talked to his probation officer is because his probation officer told him that he could not see his child. And he said, I did not want to hear that. And so I walked out and I never returned. But he knew he needed to take care of those things if he ever wanted to see his child again. So he began the classes and completing the responsibilities, but he never returned. So I called the supervisor and I talked with them, and they called the courts, and when I talked with them, he said, oh yeah, he's not going to want to talk to me because I was the one that told him that he couldn't see his daughter anymore. You know, he needs to just leave his daughter alone. And I said, well, if he's learned anything like he says he has from my program, then he's wanting to call you and apologize. And sure enough, I called him and I told him, I said, this is what you need to do. He called the supervisor and he apologized. The supervisor then called the courts and let them know that he's, you know, that they've been sending reports that he's completing his conditions, and that at the recommendation of the court, of the officer and the agency, putting him back in jail and sending him to prison is not the answer. He's working, he's going to class, he's a different person than he was a year and a half, 2 years ago. And they may extend his probation, but he won't go to prison. And so, I told him, you may have consequences. Mm-hmm. I cannot excuse your behavior, but I can say I've seen your growth. And this grown man, he's about maybe mid-20s, 250 pounds, just start crying. He said, it's the best news I ever heard. Thank you. This year. Thank you so much, miss. I appreciate it. And this is what most of these young people need. Mm-hmm. This is what they need. They need somebody to help guide them. They do. They usually attach to what's available. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work out for them, they end up in the system or dead. And then they are open and ready for guidance on what's best. And so that is far more beneficial than the alternative. The second story I have is one of my former students called, and he said, text me, and he says, I really appreciate you all working with this particular client. He says, I'm his mentor, and this particular guy is the president of the Black Chamber of Commerce. He was my former high school student, right? So now he's the Chamber of Commerce and Black Chamber of Commerce president in Dallas. And he says, I just wanted to say, he came to me and he's totally renewed. He's so happy. He's talking about going to college. He has custody of his daughter. I mean, I just thank God y'all are pouring into young men like this, you know. And, you know, the funniest thing is I got a message like that about 6 years ago about this particular young man at Mountain View. When he was going to Mountain View, someone sent me that message about him when he was talking to them about me. And so this is what our young people need. It just further confirms that this is what they need more than anything. And it hurts me to no end that we can't give that to each other, you know, to them. And the answers are here and available. And we try to fight to give the answers to the powers that be to help. But it sounds like they don't want it, except in situations like this. You know, and so I just want to encourage everyone, you know, not to give up, to allow this to be an opportunity to hold your loved ones tight, to use this as a wake up call to teach them the most important things, which are loving themselves, carrying themselves in an honorable way, always come to you or someone that they love if they need them. Associate with someone that has the same value system or better. I think that that's one of the biggest things in this particular case, because in this particular instance, George Floyd had the best friend of a former NBA player. And they didn't know that. See, all that had to happen in order for this to get to this place. It had to be videoed. It had to be in broad daylight. He had to use his knee. It had to be that gruesome for us to get to this place. And while I know that we were not wanting it to be here, but I think that it was necessary for us to see this so that we would know that we have not arrived, and there are instances where we need to join together as humans, like minds and like hearts, to raise our children up in love and mean it. I thank you so much, Chrissy, for this segment.
I think it's definitely a conversation that we need to have, because I mean, we could go on and on all day, you know, about this topic, you know, because this has been a problem in our society for a long time. The things that are happening now or that really seem like it began with Trayvon Martin have been going on all this time. You know, it's just that we have people are recording, people are doing more than just being bystanders. You know, they're uploading them to social media. They're doing Facebook Lives, Instagram Lives, whatever, to make everybody aware. And the thing of it is that it's getting exposed. Mm-hmm. And that is what's changing. And what I will hope is going to change the trajectory of police brutality, racial profiling, and some of the maybe systemic oppression or racism that, you know, people of color are continuously experiencing in different ways. You know, something that I wanted to say is that but I find very common is people, particularly people of that are non-Black, make comments about Martin Luther King in response to this issue and how Martin Luther King participated in or led a peaceful protest. You know, and as I recall reading those remarks, you know, it kind of made me almost, well, on one hand, you feel some level of anger, and on the other hand, it kind of makes you laugh because, you know, Martin Luther King was assassinated. You know, and he was assassinated during the peaceful protesting that the people that are not of color are saying that we ought to be doing, you know. And so how dare some of these individuals tell us how we should be reacting to these traumatizing and devastating events that are happening in front of us, you know. And I feel like that's just the ultimate disrespect. I mean, it really bothered me when Botham Jean died. I watched the entire trial live stream. And I recall when his brother, his little brother, got up on the stand and spoke about his brother. He described him. The way he described him reminds me of my oldest son. And, you know, my oldest son is the child that everybody loves. He's everybody's favorite student. I could see him growing up to live, to lead the type of life that Botham led, a life that was worthy of honor and praise. And so for it to just be taken away the way that it was taken away, and for no one to really know exactly what happened that night, other than that it appeared that, you know, this officer wanted to be Billy Badass, for a better lack of words, that particular night. You know, it is just something that, how do you live with, how do you move on, how do you go forward in your life and feeling safe? You know, I think that's the key word, is that we do not feel safe. People of color are not feeling safe. And, you know, for the longest time, I've tried to distance myself from the issue because I don't want to feel traumatized, or I don't want to feel a certain kind of way every time I get into my vehicle or every time I have to encounter police. But I was a few weeks back, I was driving in a Wilmer Hutchins area, and a police car, a squad car, got behind me. It was kind of dark at night. And I remember just feeling scared. You know, and I was in a car with my daughter, and I couldn't believe I'm feeling that way, you know, because it just feels so wrong that I have to feel that way, you know. And people that have not experienced that, they don't know what that's like, you know. And I could say that some of it is the media, and kind of how we're possibly getting fear induced in a way by what we're seeing and how this story portrays itself. But it is real. You know, we all have a right to feel fearful for our children of color, no matter where they are, whether they're at home or whether they're at school, and should they come into some sort of interaction with law enforcement. My son, my middle son, he loves the police. Every time he sees a police officer, he wants to say hello, you know, and so he has great respect for law enforcement. And, you know, I certainly haven't really taught him really about police brutality, but it is something, it's definitely sobering to see these type of experiences. And that's the only reason, my only take on it, is that I hope a change comes about from all of this, because I have two boys that are going to grow up into the world, and I want the world to be a better place for them, just like how our ancestors, such as Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and all the other activists who participated, did sit-ins and did protesting, even participated in riots, just so that way we could have some of the rights that we have today, just so that way we could go to school, we could integrate and go to school with people of different races. So there's a lot that's had to change based off of protesting, based off of rioting. There's a lot of things that happen that may not have been quote-unquote positive in order for us to have our life the way we are. But with that being said, we still have a long way to go.
It's true. And you know, to that point, I just want to say that's why a lot of us feel unsafe around our own kind and others, right? So that's a double-edged sword. And so America is really getting to see the rage that is within. And it's ugly, you know, and that is dealing with the hurt that is compounded with the abandonment and the betrayal and the mistreatment. And you want to hear the harshest words. Listen to a from the our poorest families. You know, impoverished families have the harshest words, you know, and we have to be mindful that this is a ugly view of what's underneath everything. And everybody does not get to see it all the time, but now they are. And so it's a case of how much are we willing to invest in making this right forever?
Right.
And I'm really hoping that we are, but I am praying that I just believe that a lot more has to happen before that takes place. I do appreciate everyone for listening. If you ever need any support or any information, we provide life coaching here with Langford Avenue. We provide success coaching. We listen in confidentiality. We help guide you into a successful path. Our goal is to help you detox emotionally so that you can take off and do the things that you need to do in life. Don't allow the things that have happened to you to become you. We can get through this, but we do have to understand that at this point, we need to stop, take a break, reflect, ask God why we are here and what we need to do to be different. It's not all. We can take all out of our vocabulary. Take all out of your vocabulary. It's not all anybody. So don't be paranoid about all police, all white people, all black people, all anything. It is a heart issue and it is a mind issue. And once we penetrate the heart and the mind, we'll be better. And therapy works. Talking to someone, processing it, your trauma properly, it works. Talk to someone. Do not continue to walk around in hatred and anger and frustration, because you don't have to. 214-870-4129 is the number. .com is also the email address. 214-870-4129 is the number. Langford Avenue, LANKFORDAVENUE at yahoo.com is the email. Thank you all. Have a blessed evening. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd like to send a special thanks to our supporters and for those listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. Have yourself a great day and be sure to join us next time on Healthy-ish. Healthy-ish is proudly supported by Langford Avenue and the Avenue Proactive Resource Center. For more information, visit our website at www.enddomesticviolenceindallas.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.